When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wait take the mic.
We are here. You can still see us, everybody. We hope if you're watching on YouTube, it's John Pollock, it's Waiting on the eve of our annual accountant meeting.
You stumped me there.
Oh, yeah.
It's the eve of what? Did I miss the memo? I'm ready for it.
Are you ready? Yeah, we were doing some prep today. Yeah, we were getting ready. We were getting in financial shape today.
I've been prepping all year, I feel, you know, with a crash course in Mark Shapiro-isms. So more than ready for this one.
Yeah, we'll see. I hope you drop some terms in this.
It's the last bastion of unifying content for us.
Our TAM's looking really good this year.
Man, TAM is through the roof. Fan TAM. Well, everybody, we had a very busy weekend on the site. You can always catch up on what you've missed over the weekend. We had Rewind to SmackDown. We had Collision Course. Bruce Lord doing the Lord's work between Collision on Saturday and then back Sunday with Karen Peterson for a full rundown of the World Tag League Final with one Karen Peterson. They will also be coming at you right after Wrestle Kingdom 20 in a couple of weeks. Plus, Wei and I going through Saturday night's main event.
Very busy. As every weekend is in professional wrestling, but we have quite the roster here to get everybody caught up on everything.
I'm excited for this weekend. This weekend is pretty calm. There's like that AAA show in Guadalajara that WWE's running on YouTube, but this is a very quiet weekend. There's no UFC till January 24th. We don't have any WWE weekend shows for quite a bit. No AEW until World's End. And then AEW has a big pay-per-view break until like March.
More time for those Christmas parties.
Yeah. It all evens out with 3 hours of SmackDown. So let's not get too excited about anything. Plus, we would be wellness policy tomorrow.
That is correct. Yeah, it's December, so it means our annual call-in edition. We are open topic, discussing just everything. Call in, talk about it. Let us know how your year was, maybe what your 2026 will be like. 1 p.m. Eastern time, Tuesday, at youtube.com/postwrestling.
Yes, I've got to shoot Neil a message. We we just realized I planned a phone call.
You double booked him?
I did double book him, and I'm going to have to alert him that.
How dare you, Neil? We're not getting your priorities straight.
I think Neil did double book himself, but that was my fault. I had to change days.
Why don't you have your meeting on the show? It is open phone line, so just call in. Do your meeting then.
You probably know what we're doing, and it would probably not work so well on a live format. So anyway, wellness policy will be live on Tuesday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. We will be up an hour later on Wednesday after the 3 hour edition of Dynamite. So mark that down. We'll be up around 11 Eastern Wednesday night. And all roads lead to Thursday. We're going back 23 years. Before John Cena made his way up to Raw and SmackDown, we had to assemble the rosters. And on one side, we had Vince McMahon, and on the other, Ric Flair, to draft their teams. All I can say is, folks, is the 2002 draft, it was not too kind to female performers. If you are one that is not happy with like the amount of time that... the number of matches the women get in AEW or how they're presented in WWE, boy, wait till we get to the draft. Okay.
What was the female roster at the time? Trish, Lita,
Jazz
and,
Lita. Let's just say that they make 20 picks and there's one woman picked on the whole 20. And she is the last pick, before they go to the website draft lottery.
Okay. And who was that?
Lita. Trish? Lita was the only woman draft. Jazz was exempt because she was the champion.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we will go. It's a 2 hour edition of Raw. So that's, that makes for an easy watch.
I think it'll be an interesting discussion because, I mean, this is obviously coming off of the, well, failure of the WCW invasion and in their attempt to, you know, fabricate competition within their own brands. I think it'll be interesting to talk about, like, what actual splitting of staff they might have actually, you know, attempted backstage. But also maybe just the ambitiousness of the draft. It before, I think, you know, the repeated failures of it that we continue to see 20 something years later.
Yes. And this is all headlined by a undisputed title match where new champion Triple H defends the title against Chris Jericho and Stephanie McMahon in a triple threat.
Just some classic professional wrestling
going back to 2002. So that's coming up Thursday on Rewind Away. Tonight, though, we are going to the Giant Center in Hershey, Pennsylvania. WrestleTix reporting 7,977 tickets distributed. Their last show that they ran here in Hershey was Raw in October of 2024 that did 7,756. So a very small difference, 200 extra for this one. That's the post-Cena bump that they got. Those 200 people that decided, it's time to go to the Giant Center. Before we get into Raw itself, did you see the angle that they put up on Twitter with Cody and Drew and the home meeting with Nick Aldis?
I did not, no.
They put this up during Raw. It's 5 minutes. I'm sure this will be aired on SmackDown. But Nick shows up at Drew's house, which is unbelievably... there's some Christmas decorations in the McIntyre household. And Aldis sits him down and negotiates to bring him back to SmackDown. Somehow, Drew has gone from being suspended to, it's like he's a free agent that Nick Aldis is trying to land. He's like, we want you back to SmackDown. We will give you a title match. All you have to do is apologize to the referee. And Drew turns this down. He's like, no, I had an unsafe working environment, so you will do this on my terms. I get the title match, and Cody cannot lay a hand on me before the match, or else he is stripped of the title. And I get to pick the stipulation. It's like, aren't you suspended? Aren't you like suspended without pay? And now you're dictating the terms. And Nick Aldis is like, okay, I can make all that work. I've just got to run it by Cody and legal. And so they're about to agree when Drew gets his like his surveillance footage on his phone. I'm not kidding here. And Cody is trying to like break into the home. And we have random security here to stop Cody. Drew loses his mind that Cody has showed up where my family lives. And they get into this brawl, including like their Christmas like soldier getting knocked over. There's the Lake of Reincarnation here for Drew McIntyre. He turned into 3MB Drew here. And they get into this wild brawl.
This looks awesome.
It is the most expensive thing WWE probably shot between this and Raw. So there is that. I was surprised they didn't mention this at all on Raw, but I guess this is their SmackDown angle. So we can't be promoting other brands' angles on our show.
Did they seem to hint towards a stipulation for the match?
They didn't hint towards the stipulation, nor did they state when the match would be. But I'm thinking this could be the first three-hour SmackDown. That would make sense. That's in Buffalo.
All families legal match. All right.
Yeah, maybe like a home invasion match. Many ways we can do. Does this look like a legit cop here? Guy with the, with the butcher Paul Vachon beard?
I don't know what you're suggesting. I mean, cops can wear any sort of.
It's almost
of
like they went to the local wrestling academy and just found the some trainees.
Yeah, they just, you know. Yeah.
Anyway, this was quite the angle. Raw begins with a recap of Gunther's win against Cena.
We should also mention like the bizarre taping schedule that they're embarking on for this particular show.
Yeah, they're doing double tapings tonight and Friday to cover this week's shows and next week's shows. Yeah. And I guess they're taping like elements like all over the place.
Well, it seemed to me like they had just taped prior to Raw going live SmackDown for the 26th. So they taped next week's edition of SmackDown prior to tonight's Raw.
And so they're doing this Friday SmackDown like live?
Yeah, live. Yeah.
And taping Monday's Raw.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So they're taping SmackDown essentially like two shows, like really three shows out of sequence.
Yeah.
Like, so if you've read the spoilers, it it does not look like a SmackDown that most of us actually. We will watch it, of course, but it does not sound like the most exciting SmackDown at all, at least from an in-ring perspective. So yeah, they're basically doing all of this so that next week the talent can stay at home and not have to work. And then obviously they don't want to have the crews work twice, so they had the SmackDown crew do next week's show tonight. Meanwhile, the Raw crew will do next week's show on Friday.
Right, right. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm glad they get the week off at least. And
these shows aren't going to be, they don't look all that exciting. At least the SmackDown does not.
So they recap Gunther's win against Cena, and they had the most dramatic music as the prelude to Cena tapping out. And they really emphasize Michael Cole's line about professional wrestling destroying sports entertainment. Like, you wonder if like that's going to be the line that is most associated with this. And I find that to be such an interesting soundbite that they opted to include on Saturday, and then again like really hit that on this show. Like, it really felt like this is Vince's last major star, was almost like the feel of this, and the term that is so synonymous with Vince McMahon.
I think that's how everybody who heard the line, I guess if you are, you know, have been watching wrestling for any sort of like, you know, considerable amount of time, that's how anybody would take it. I'm sure Vince, if he managed to watch the show, probably took it the very same way. I don't know if it was meant to be anything else, you know, like it's the end of the Vince McMahon brand of professional wrestling or whatever he wants to call it, you know? But these video packages always give you a glimpse of like, I think the intended sort of effect of what these, you know, live performances were meant to convey. And we saw that, you know, in this particular moment, before Cena tapping out with the smile, he had his life flash before his eyes, you know, his entire career flashing in front of him, as we got to see via this montage, before, I guess, somewhat relenting and giving the, which might be at this point, like sort of, I don't know, like
I'm so excited for the next 10 years to hear all the written theories of this finish. I mean, this is exactly what Cena wanted.
I feel like this is going to be maybe the next I'm sorry, I love you, although like bit tougher to replicate. You know, somebody just like giving this sort of like smile.
Forget this finish. It's all the copycats after this. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Okay. All the people that are going to try to replicate this.
I've already seen it. I've already seen like TikToks of like people like you know, cuddling up like in somebody's arms, like, you know, getting ready to sleep and then doing the tap. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Amazing. Maybe he was talking to Chuck Zito beforehand and he's like, you know, just do the Jax Teller at the end of Sons of Anarchy. You're embracing. Never you weren't a Sons of Anarchy watcher, were you?
I'm not much of an anything watcher these days.
So Gunther arrives and just thunderous boos. He comes out with just that shit-eating grin. And the crowd is chanting at him, "You suck." Then it turns into, "You tapped out." He's like, "I tapped out." And he fights through the boos to deliver his message. They don't want to even let him start. And while this, you know, with Dominic, it's like, it's a part of the show. Like, it's this entertaining character that we're going to just like berate with booze. This was one where it just felt like they legit just want to shut this guy down. And he just played it so well here. And when he finally gets to talk, he gets to state that he made Cena give up. And when he gave up, he tapped out like a little bitch. And he starts laughing. And then it was like he left the ring and came back like over and over. And he got onto the desk and he just said the exact same thing over again, and repeated that he made him tap out like a little bitch, which is probably going to be his go-to line whenever he talks about Cena. And it's his time now, and he will forever be known as the man that made Cena give up. So he walks to the back and the camera follows him into Gorilla, into the back. He walks by Tozawa and Otis, and then he walks by R-Truth, who calls him a piece of trash. And Gunther is just doesn't care, just laughs them all off. Pierce asks if he's proud of what he said out there tonight, and Pierce calls him an asshole and tells him, "You're done for the night. Leave the building." He was escorted out of the building for talking shit.
Yeah, I'm like, what did he actually do? Okay, like, it'd be one thing if Gunther cheated to victory, but it was a totally clean, very legitimate win, completely clean. And so for Pierce to react this way, what, simply based off of like calling him a bitch or tapping like a bitch, people have done way worse in professional wrestling. This is really within the bounds of, I
where's,
think,
where's know, the First Amendment in this version of WWE?
Well, obviously not on Raw, not with Adam Pearce.
So he doesn't even care. He's like, I got a guaranteed deal. I make the same amount whether I wrestle one match or 100 this year. So he just walks outside, and there in the freezing Pennsylvania winter is Allen in his short sleeve, just sitting next to this car that looks like it needs a defroster. And AJ is just sitting there. I'm like, why are you out here? And how long were you going to wait here until Gunther might get to his car? Like, Rod just started 10 minutes ago. And
if Pierce didn't eject him, I think he would have been out there all day.
Oh, so he gets out, and Gunther just smiles at AJ. AJ doesn't say a word. He just sits there. It's like, hail, I'm going to retire someday too, and you're going to beat the shit out of me. And so Gunther gets into his car. I don't know why, but this made me think of, like, it was so slow, and the way he got into the car, that I just could not get out of my head, like, Vince McMahon getting into the limo and it exploding. It had that tension to it where I just thought, this car is going to explode.
You think AJ, like, why, like, hot, like, put a bomb in his car, in Gunther's car?
Boom. And, Gunther pulls down the window and does the "you can't see me" sign. The fucking star of the show was Gunther by leaps and bounds. And I think we're getting AJ and Gunther a lot sooner than maybe we thought. Like, this feels like this is coming up.
Oh, it seems to be the immediate direction. Yeah, which is interesting, considering AJ is still tag team champion. I mean, maybe he'll be dropping the title soon enough, but this seems to be the clear next direction for Gunther. I mean, I thought, you know, in totality, like, the segment was very simple. Didn't really have a lot of verbiage, and I don't think he needed it. He really just, they let the crowd do the talking for him, and they were right to expect, I think, a nuclear reaction, which I think Gunther kind of received, like, as of, you know, Saturday. I think there's probably a lot of rightful criticism of the Saturday moment kind of being hijacked by the Paul Levesque appearance and the Paul Levesque reaction. You know, somebody asked, maybe in our feedback or somewhere else, like, did people come off of Saturday night's main event really seeing Paul Levesque as the heel, getting all the heat for that booking, versus Gunther, who should be the one getting all that heat? And in reality, yes, Levesque might still have it, but at least on the show, in canon, I think this segment in tonight managed to shift the focus back on Gunther and shift the heat back onto Gunther, so that he's the person you're thinking about responsible for the Cena retirement.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Throughout the month of January, you have the chance to lock in your subscription at the Post Wrestling Cafe for all of 2026 before the price increase takes effect February the 1st. Simply sign up before February 1st and you will lock in that price all year long. If that's not enough, this month we have the annual Best and Worst Of show as we get together with the Poison Rana crew to look back at 2025. We're also doing live watch-alongs of the Royal Rumbles from 1990 and 1995 with Brandon from New Jersey, a retrospective on the Tanahashi-Okada rivalry, plus reaction to Wrestle Kingdom 20, a review of TNA's debut on AMC, and much more, including TNA Genesis, UFC 324. It's all found at postwrestlingcafe.com.
So Wade Barrett explains he has never experienced the visceral hatred that one man has received like Gunther tonight. This guy missed out on the territories, didn't he?
Maybe, yes. Mm-hmm.
The Usos and New Day, and what I am not exaggerating, according to Joe Tessitore, is they have had 44 matches in the past. This is their first in 3 years, and they have fought for the tag titles 16 times. So are you ready for round 45?
You know, they mentioned it was 3 years since this match. And, I mean, this is one of those, like, you know, Randy Orton, John Cena type of meetings where, like, even, like, not meeting for many years does not really feel like it's enough. You know, like, it's not enough, at least for me, to make me miss it. It just feels like I've still seen this a whole lot.
What portion of getting the heat on the Usos did you enjoy the most? The first, second, third, or fourth time they did it in this match?
They gave this one a lot of time.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Did. It was just beat on Jay. Then he makes it builds up to the tag to Jimmy. We beat down on Jimmy. We build up to the hot tag. Jay gets in. We beat down on Jay. It's like, this was like, we're going to do like three matches and just spread it out. Yeah.
I mean, that really is the novelty. If you want to like look for something new about this one, it's the New Day wrestling as heels and Jay, you know, kind of like escalating to superstar level, which actually, I mean, I thought the work was good, but yeah, maybe in totality probably could have been shaved for a few minutes.
You know what is very much impacting my viewing of some of these matches now is that for those that are on, well, we're all watching on Netflix. Yep. So no longer, like if you're, I'm virtually never live and we never skip through. So I'm watching now the matches in their entirety. Mm-hmm. And these commercials, like, I'm sorry, this might have been the worst one, but they are just doing nothing. And it's like, we are not on USA anymore. It's not like this is just for the house that you're doing this. It's a whole audience that is watching these, and they have to be structured a little bit differently than this, where it's just continue the heat for 2 minutes, and it's just lifeless. And the audience knows it. Like, you can... This crowd knows when they're at a commercial break. It just grinds to a halt. And I think now that we're watching these matches in their completion, it's just so bizarre.
I have to think like it's like they've been trained throughout the years to like not like, you know, go like what 60%, you know, like during the commercial break, make sure you like don't like use this time to rest. Don't empty your gas tank. And then once we come back, then go fast. But it is in contrast to AEW matches where, like, throughout the trailer breaks, like, they're still going pretty hard. Not everybody, of course, but
and you can argue, like, the AEW ones, like, that is a commercial break for the U.S. audience. This is not a commercial for anyone.
But we have picture-in-picture. That is one of the differences.
That's true. They are doing picture-in-picture. But, like, this is not a commercial for anybody.
Right.
Everyone's watching this.
Although in archive, this, I believe, it still gets trimmed out.
Oh, okay. Well, then, in that case...
But still, you have a lot of people watching live. Like, that's part of the, you know, selling point, isn't it?
Blows my mind. It really dragged this match. So, at one point, Grayson Waller trips Jay. He gets ejected. That gets a response. And Jimmy slips to the floor and eats a DDT from Woods. They hit the daylight on Jimmy. Jay is in for the save. Trouble in Paradise is delivered to Jay. All four are down, which is just, like, Pavlovian for this audience. Oh, they're all down. This is awesome. I was like, this is not awesome. This is a match. Jay spears Woods on the floor. Jimmy spears Kofi, and they hit the 1D to win in 17 minutes and 26 seconds, completing their 45th contest together.
Mm-hmm. I think when they timed this out, like they must have thought a lot more people would care about the pairing, and maybe a lot of people do. Personally, like 3 years doesn't feel like it's been enough to kind of separate these. And in that meantime, like Jay has sort of like, you know, completely exceeded the star power of the three of them. And what I think should be like a very celebrated legacy, like feud, really does not feel that way in 2025. At least it certainly didn't hit me nor this crowd who, you know, let's remember, like they've already sat through SmackDown tapings prior to this. So they were,
it's a great
tired.
Point you bring up. Cause it was like, they went nuts for Gunther. In a good way. And the rest of this show, like, I thought it really struggled.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah. So, I mean, they were not a great crowd, so they didn't necessarily elevate these 17 minutes. But that said, I thought, like, the action was about as strong as I think you've always seen it from these four. You know, like, they show great chemistry. It's just, like, without the stakes, without hotter, like, characters in the New Day, didn't really feel like it was that important of a match.
I think this is like a lot of extended TV matches in WWE where it's like it really comes down to like the final couple of minutes where we're going to do the saves and we're going to do all the big spots. And but it's like the lead up to that. It just to me, it was just like they New Day took like 80% of it and it really came to a halt during some of these breaks. Announced for January 5th, in addition to Punk and Braun for the world title, they have now added the Kabuki Warriors defending the tag titles against Rio.
Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that takes us to the return of the subtitled promos of the Kabuki Warriors, who not really got much promo time of late. So They were back here. Io betrayed her family. Kairi says, "We loved you." And Asuka says, "All you had to do, Io, was apologize and acknowledge me as your senpai. But then you chose Rhea over us, and you will know nothing but pain. And we will end you on January 5th.
End them.
They really have taken a step back as presences on the show in the past few weeks. I mean, prior to War Games, but even coming off of War Games, I feel like I've seen a lot less Kyrie and Asuka in their backstage interactions with them, you know, whether it be Io and Rhea or like any of these other tag teams for a bit. And it's been somewhat disappointing because I thought they were catching a lot of fire for those months.
Cena got in the way. Now it's back to being the Kabuki Warriors show.
Yeah.
Byron interviewed Dominic during the break. He feels fantastic that Cena is gone, and he is the last one to beat him for a title. That's his distinguishing.
That's the qualifier?
Yes, he the last one to beat him for
he
a title.
He could say he's the last person to pin John Cena. That's technically right.
That's true. That's true. He could also say that as well.
Yeah.
And Raquel is going to bring the gold back to Judgment Day tonight. She will not. The Vision's in the locker room. Bronson Reed has flattened LA Knight. Well, last week he flattened him, and the update was he has, broken sternum, I think, was the injury they assigned him. So he's going to be gone for some time.
Out indefinitely is the
out
answer. So I think happy holidays, LA Knight.
So Bron Breakker wants to destroy CM Punk tonight. Logan wants to know who the masked man is. Heyman doesn't know, but he's been convenient for us. And Heyman explains that to Bron, you've got to wait 21 days. So it's like Braun is like this idiot who just wants, like, he's a meathead. That's what it is. He does not think game plan or strategy. So that's what Heyman's role is. He's got to contain this man from his own devices. So tonight they got to lock in because Logan's got to deal with Rey Mysterio.
I feel like there might have been some attempt to just tell the audience, hey, like, you might find out who the masked man's identity is. But I don't know if they drove that home hard enough.
Not at all.
It wasn't until the end of the show when you had Pierce say, I need to find out who this person is, that you really got the sense, okay, they're going to do the reveal tonight. I would have hit it a bit harder, like right off the bat here.
Yeah, they didn't make Pierce sound like this was some threat or like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Io and Ripley come out. But Asuka appears in the front row and hits Rhea with the, quote, poison mist into the face. The poison mist. And they jump Ripley and Io, and they're prepared to give the insane elbow to Rhea when Io, Eddie Kingston's it, and jumps on top of Rhea and takes the insane elbow to the spine to save Rhea Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ring exploded. Maybe that'll be the stip on January 5th. Exploding
mist
wire
match.
Death match. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Poison mist way. Poison.
She'll be fine next week.
She was fine backstage. Like, she was like, you know, it's inconvenient, but she'll live.
You get immune to it.
She's got a match next week. Maxine Dupri against Ivy Nile. Her first defense of the Intercontinental title. So Maxine, her strategy is, this was like when you have that video game character that's got like the one big move, and like Blanca with like the just electrify your opponent. Okay. That's what she's got with this ankle lock. Okay. She's just going to go for that ankle lock a million times in this
match. Was that your character? Are you Blanca?
I always went for Blanca, and I was so cheap. Yeah. That's how I would always like play people in Street Fighter, and they just get annoyed and try to hit me, and I'd electrocute them.
For me, it would be like E Honda with the slaps.
Oh, yeah.
Hiroki Goto. I don't know.
Hiroki Goto.
Have you seen those shots, by the way?
I have, yes.
What do you think?
I mean, I don't have high hopes of this being any kind of enjoyable movie.
I do. I think it'll be so, like, I mean,
this is the kind of movie you'll love. You will love this.
It's not taking itself seriously, at least you're, you know, but like, man, some of these wigs look terrible. I'm very much looking forward to this. Like, Cody's, especially. You know,
on the Goto front, New Japan put out this video. It's an hour long video on Tanahashi's history, going through every major feud and every story of his from 2000. Well, from his debut in 99, all up until the present. And I mean, it's hard to condense that all into an hour, but it's awesome. I watched this whole thing, and some of the highlights of his match with Goto, I want to say this was like 08, 09. And it was just, this video was great. Just watching like some of the highlights of Tanahashi and all the big opponents he faced. They went through all the Tokyo Dome matches that he's had. I mean, it's a really, really great video that they put out.
Is it on YouTube or?
Yeah. It's on their YouTube channel.
Okay. Cool.
So Maxine is constantly going for the ankle lock. She tries for a Suzuki armbar, but gets dumped to the floor. And Nile is going for her dragon sleeper. And Maxine catches her with a Liger bomb. There were some like hard drops on some of these power bombs in this match. And maybe the coolest looking spot was Ivy using like her one arm dragon sleeper in the tree of woe as she hung upside down with Ivy Nile. Mm-hmm. And then Maxine gets up and does the sit up to suplex her off, tries for the high cross, misses, and then goes back to the ankle lock. It's broken multiple times, but like Gunther, she just keeps coming back and putting this ankle lock on. And finally, Maxine applies the torques the ankle, and Ivy Nile smiles. And that was it. She accepted her fate, and that
she
was
earned
it.
The
Maxine,
sunset.
Maxine wins 9:57.
Yeah, I mean, they're really committing to this evolution of Maxine as a legitimate wrestler, which is a very interesting choice, honestly. You know, because her entire gimmick prior to this is she's a fish out of water, right? She's not somebody who's supposed to be here because she's just not necessarily the athlete that, you know, like somebody like an Ivy Nile or
she's the sister of a stylist.
that is her end in this business. That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, just to, again, attempt to push her as a serious wrestler by putting her out there without any like benefit of editing, but a straightforward wrestling match. Can she play this character of somebody who's now evolved into becoming a legitimate competitor? It's very bold because it's a lot harder to fake legitimacy in a live setting, certainly. But it makes sense if you're going to try to give her a real push as IC champion. And listen, like, she's trying to play the role of technician right now, and she has a long way to go, of course. But you definitely see considerable improvement in Maxine. You know, like they say, fake it till you make it. And at least, at the very least, I think she's trying her best to fake it. And in again, like, the end result is that you're getting an improved Maxine compared to maybe certainly how she started, you know, when she got called up on the main roster. Maybe even when she started, like, earlier this year. There aren't any, to my, you know, viewing, any sort of significant botches in this match like there were in previous matches. I think the ankle lock entries actually look really great. She's been probably training that a whole lot. The overall confidence feels much stronger. So again, you're not going to confuse her with Kurt Angle, but like, I think there's enough evolution to make the character change work. But whether or not the audience will take to it, I think remains to be seen, because I kind of felt like this match, maybe this crowd isn't the best judge because they were kind of a dead card all night, but you know, like, what made her prior matches work was that she overcame audience expectations. You know, like, here's somebody who's supposed to be a manager. Oh, she's doing an ocean cyclone suplex. That's really cool. Now there's kind of already an expectation.
Which she's never done since either.
No, but maybe, you know, now there's already an expectation for her to like occasionally do some special moves. She's the IC champion after all. So you didn't really get that like big wow reaction in this match, in my opinion, at least not as big as like some of those other ones. Yeah. But still, like, I thought she and Ivy looked pretty good and improved.
I mean, she hustles really hard, and I think that comes through in the matches. Like, it's a long, you know, road to go for her. But I think this is more like this really felt like a burnt out crowd already on this show, and that's not like to excuse like the, you know, for, you know, a match that, you know, it's your job to re-engage a crowd like that. But this was a tough crowd, I thought, for pretty much all the matches on tonight's show.
Yeah. I have to say though, like, that spin kick she does, I think that has to go. Like, that probably is one of the worst looking parts of her.
It's also awkward because she, 9 times out of 10, she misses the spin kick, like, on per, yeah, like, the person gets out of the way. So it's like, you've got to position it, and she's flexible, but it just goes all over the place. And it's like, it's a weird landing most times.
It just happens too slow for it to look like an offensive maneuver.
Like,
yes,
you know,
yes,
you're not hitting this person, and you're just like, yeah, don't tear my quad here as I go for the spin kick.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
So, folks, he might be retired, but man, let's just wring that towel a little more, because Mattel Creations has put out a limited edition John Cena last match action figure. I'm sure very priced for the holiday season, so the whole family can get their limited edition last match action figure of John.
I know plenty of nerds who I'm sure will.
This thing's going to be like $400 or something. God knows, yeah, whatever the hell it is. Is that it?
Yeah.
How many hands does it come with?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hands.
What the hell is this?
Well, no, you could switch the hands up.
Why would you? Have you ever had an action figure as a kid that you said, man, I wish I could have different hands?
I have not, but you realize these are not so much sold to children, but adult collectors now.
That's probably a safe assumption.
Who want to pose them in all sorts of different directions, yes.
Pierce meets with Javon Evans, and he got his attention. He got Pierce's attention on Saturday. Los Americanos enter, and Kaiser's speaking Spanish. Evans says he doesn't speak Spanish, but you're talking crazy. And this leads to a match being announced for next week. This was not taped, this match, correct? In the spoilers you saw?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, because this is probably going to be taped on Friday, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they only did SmackDown. Not Raw.
Saxton meets with Otis and Tozawa during the commercial break. I was like, what in God's name do they have to say? The opening question is, guys, how cool was it to see Maxine defend her title tonight? The match you guys weren't even asked to be in her corner for. And they were like, Tozawa's like, it was amazing. And Otis then, there is a purpose for this, says that John Cena taught him a lot, just like my father taught me. So he's got two fathers, one of who's just retired. And the man cuts the most serious promo of his entire career and says, my father always showed respect, but Gunther showed none. And I'm going to shut his mouth if he ever steps out of line again. So I think this man is being led to slaughter on TV in the next week or two.
Seems like it. Yeah. I had no idea. Otis felt this way about John Cena. To my knowledge, I don't think they've had any interaction.
Father figure, yeah.
All of a sudden, I guess, influenced him enough, as much as a father has. So, all right. Yeah,
it's sure. Wonderful.
Whatever you need to get eaten by Gunther, I suppose.
CM Punk comes out, and he's pissed. He was not medically cleared to compete or fly the last 2 weeks. But it was even more painful sitting at home listening to Braun speak. You cross-eyed Neanderthal Nepo baby. Where was Adam Pearce to heave this guy out of the arena? Sounded way worse than calling him a bitch. He knows that brains don't run in Braun's family. And you signed up for war at Survivor Series. You want the 2011 Punk? You can't even handle the 2025 Punk without help from your friends. You didn't get this shot by yourself.
So is he admitting he's not as good as he?
He's like, I'm not 2011 Punk, but I'm still a 6 out of 10. So I've seen a lot of blue chip prospects get gassed up only to wilt under the pressure of the bright lights. And I'm going to rip your eyes out of your head and piss on your single digit IQ brain if you ever bring up my wife's name again. That's a lot of like decapitation. Like, I'm going to rip your eyes out and then urinate on your brain.
That's a lot of work. Yeah. You're going to have to do a bit more.
That's quite the arrangement there he's going for. He says that you've got the balls, but not the heart to carry this company. And he kept calling him Brawny as a ties in with the Nepo baby critique,
oh,
I guess.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then he says that when everyone abandons you after you lose, all you'll be left with is Dumb and Dumber, your father and your dumb uncle. And even with Steiner math, everyone knows GTS equals 1, 2, 3.
Yes.
I was waiting for him to like go into like Jackson 5 here.
I was hoping for him to do a full on Steiner math promo. We were expecting, I think, a fiery promo from Punk in response to Breakers last week, and I think we got it here. I thought, like, in delivery and in craft, this was a great retort from Punk. Very spirited lines delivered.
I didn't meet Aleister Blackett.
You gave a great recap. You know, your response, I think, just as good as CM Punk's here. I mean, the Steiner's catching a lot of strays, and I think by the end of the night, like, we recognized, okay, like, Bronny is taking this a bit more seriously.
He did mention to call up your dumb father and even dumber uncle and bring them to Brooklyn.
Okay, so we can expect them to be there.
I mean, bring that up, like, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that they're there.
But, okay, if they show up, then that means they have to play heel, don't they?
Yeah,
do they have to get involved?
I don't want to see either of them getting physical at this stage of the game. I think that'd look really clumsy.
Yeah,
for Punk to have to sell for these guys, yeah.
I thought it was a strong retort. Although I will say, like, if we're comparing these to 2011 punk, I mean, there is like an air of like authenticity that I feel at this point is missing. Like there's so much, maybe it's just like from coming off of like seeing this guy like present John Cena with the championship and just like, you know, cry for him and do all this stuff.
This is company man punk. That is the CM.
It just feels like, hey, you're tasked to deliver a strong promo. Like in 2011, I could buy that this man might have a grudge against somebody who's pushed beyond, I think, what they should be. Now it just feels like he's a guy who's playing a role. And I don't know if that's like me feeling there's something lacking in the delivery itself, or if it's just like maybe what my opinion is of CM Punk in 2025 versus what it was in 2011 that's affecting it.
Judgment Day is in the back. Dom's excited to see what the Vision do to his deadbeat dad tonight. And this is where they briefly mentioned JD is on the shelf for a while. And Liv's response was, okay.
I wonder if she had something to do with it. Like this was like kind of oddly timed, and like from what JD's tweet seemed to indicate, like it seemed like this was voluntary, at least in terms of timing, right? Like they might have had time to write him off, but they really did not. So
yeah,
I wonder if they'll reveal an answer and like Liv might have been behind it somehow later on.
Well, Liv and Roxanne offer to be in Raquel's corner. She wants to handle Vicar on her own, so they're fine with that. And Perez is going to take care of Bayley next week. And then Liv says, we're going for the tag titles. So that brings us to Stephanie Vicar and Raquel Rodriguez for the women's belt. And this was another match that it was something, because it is just like a muted response. And then the devil's kiss and the place like erupts. It's crazy. It was just like night and day, the responses here, but Raquel is just destroying her. Eventually we get Vicar fighting back, hitting her dragon screw, armbar in the ropes. And again, no heat until this devil's kiss, and this crowd goes wild. Double knees in the corner. Raquel avoids the SVB, clotheslines her. And then as they go to the floor, Raquel gets posted, and Nikki Bella jumps the barricade, attacking both for the DQ in 8:42. Rack attack 2.0 to Vicar, and she yells, respect the legend.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So
she's back. It continues.
She didn't really go anywhere.
No, but she didn't. Back. I mean, yeah. I really thought last week was like us, or at least the show, like really pushing Nikki down the card into more of like a Miz-like role, but they're actually keeping her at this level. They're keeping her relevant, getting, you know, one up on Raquel this week, and seemingly building to a three-way that I don't think anybody is asking for.
No, I don't think they are. I don't need to see the singles match again. Maybe you put Raquel in to the betterment of the match, but yeah, I don't know. This Nikki comeback, it was, I don't know. I just don't see her as a regular character, like a week-to-week character.
Yeah, I don't know if I see her at this level. Again, like world, not a world title contender. Maybe in a tag team next to somebody, like maybe.
The only thing you have left is doing like the reunion with Brie and doing something there. Like she's at a level, like much like a Trish, where it's like like you could do the comeback and you come back for like a month or two, and then like it's like a limited engagement type of run that you're going to be having. Like she has not come here and blown the doors off the place. And it's, you know, they do see her as, you know, a star, but I think the more she just becomes a regular character, that kind of whittles away.
I guess I wonder, like, I mean, we don't necessarily know what the metrics are, but like, you know, how much crossover appeal is she providing for her particular audience that, you know, like, again, might tune into her podcast, like know her from other celebrity and types of things, but not professional wrestling. I wonder. But, you know, like for Vicar, much like Jade on SmackDown, I mean, she is having to deal with so much of the stars on this roster being in the tag team division right now. Becky, who, you know, is still missing, but even her, like Becky's kind of off on her own island, you know, not involved with the world title. So both world champions not really feeling like the top of the card.
Pierce meets with Heyman and is accusing Heyman of knowing who the masked man is. And he's like, who is it? Heyman says, Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch, Nick Aldis, Bruno Sammartino. What a reveal that would have been. Could you imagine Bruno in the Vision?
Bruno, I'm sure, could have done a hell of a stomp.
Let me tell you something, Adam Pearce. You book me in the next club with that CM Punk.
That'd be an amazing match.
It's not Bruno, spoiler, but Heyman doesn't know. He says, just because this guy is convenient for us doesn't make me guilty. we're benefiting from this rogue attacker. And Pierce then says, I want to know who it is by the end of the night. But this, to our point, this was not done in such a way where it was, I think anyone felt like this was some hook to keep you to the end of the show.
But it was also so late into the show that I don't know if it would have really had any effect. I mean, if you're watching, you're probably watching at this point till the end.
Yeah. Ripley walks in. She wants to face Asuka next week, despite the poison that has been absorbed by her retina. She'll be good to go next week. She's fine.
Well, they have the antidote in the back.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Asuka not ejected from the building either, by the way, for poisoning a woman.
She didn't say bitch.
That's true. That's the line. Ray meets with Punk. Punk will have his back tonight. Jackie Redmond interviews AJ and Dragon Lee. They put over the Usos, but we are the team to beat, and they're going to go talk to Adam Pearce. It's like, cool. Go talk to him, and that's that. Nikki walks in, is not sorry for what she did. That would have been awesome if she apologized for what she just did. Sorry. Just had a lapse of judgment there. She will put people beneath her in their place. I paved the way for these women, and Raquel and Vicaire should be shining my boots. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the stipulation.
A boot shining match.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Next week on the holiday edition of Raw, Bayley, Roxanne, Javon Evans against Rayo, Pete Dunne, and Asuka against the blind.
Rayo, not Rio. Don't get confused.
Sorry, okay? Rayo. Not. We will have Rio represented, but Rayo. Maxine is with Bayley and congratulates her on the win, but she like busted a nail here. It was all bloody. Looked disgusting. Yeah, that was gross. Lyra walks in and asks Bayley, how do you feel about Saturday night? And Bayley gets all glum. Well, I lost to someone with a lot less experience. And, you know, it's made me think a lot about myself and maybe what Asuka told me is right. And Lyra's like, well, that's not the Bayley I grew up watching. That's not the Bayley I teamed with. And calls her an idiot. And this fires up Bayley, who falls for this hook, line, and sinker, gets motivated, and calls Lyra an idiot.
Yeah. I mean, breaking into her like Mr. Hyde character. So that's still there. That dynamic is still there. I mean, again, I know these are your favorite segments, Sean. I think it's at a happy level now where like it doesn't come out every single week. And on occasion when you need it to for storytelling purposes like this, like to justify a loss, I thought it worked pretty fine. Again, these aren't the easiest types of performances, I feel, you know, for somebody to be able to just like break into like a duality to character. But I think she actually does it pretty well. Please don't make fun of me.
The bar is pretty fine. If that's what we hit here, then it's a win.
Throughout the month of January, you have the chance to lock in your subscription at the Post Wrestling Cafe for all of 2026 before the price increase takes effect February the 1st. Simply sign up before February 1st and you will lock in that price all year long. If that's not enough, this month we have the annual Best and Worst Of show as we get together with the Poison Rana crew to look back at 2025. We're also doing live watch-alongs of the Royal Rumbles from 1990 and 1995 with Brandon from New Jersey, a retrospective on the Tanahashi-Okada rivalry, plus reaction to Wrestle Kingdom 20, a review of TNA's debut on AMC, and much more, including TNA Genesis, UFC 324. It's all found at postwrestlingcafe.com.
And then Rey Mysterio, Logan Paul. You know what was interesting on this show, and it's Netflix, no cross promotion for this Jake Paul fight on Friday. I thought we'd get maybe some mentions on this, but there was nothing on the show that
you've never had that. There. I mean, you've had some mention, I guess, from like some referencing from Logan, but yeah, nothing really ever.
This is the first Jake Paul fight we've had on Netflix since WWE has started there. Although there has been other Netflix boxing fights since, but that broadcast, by the way, is going to have not just Mauro Ranallo part of the broadcast, but Corey Erdman is part of the team as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. That's amazing. Wow. Yeah, two people we used to work with.
Yes. Logan stops a 619 and hits a big boot. There were like a million 619 attempts, and it was just that is Ray's devil's kiss.
Yes.
The whole match is structured around hitting a 619, and the man has figured out how to get over in front of a WWE audience with organisms flying through his knees.
What do you mean, stem cells?
Yes.
I guess they're organisms, yeah. Okay.
Kind of, or they used to be. There's a quebrada by Logan Paul. It was insane how much distance this guy got. Like, he's massive, and he's going three quarters of the way across the ring. It's spectacular. Mm-hmm. Ray avoids the splash. Paul cuts off another 619. And then they're both laying on the ground, and Logan's got his arm around the head of Ray, and he like pivots his hips to take him over to like consecutive suplexes. You remember Eddie Guerrero?
No.
He was doing an Eddie. He was doing a spot that Eddie Guerrero used to use.
Oh, okay.
For heat.
Must have been a very popular wrestler. Yeah.
He was. It was a nice little tribute here. And then Ray knocks him off the buckle, does his own Eddie mannerisms, hits the sliding splash to the floor, and now Breaker and Reed have lost faith in Logan Paul, so they're walking out. Punk shows up with a chair, taking them to the back, and Heyman passes the brass knuckles to Paul, but he's drop-kicked, hit with the 619, and the brass knuckles are laying there on the apron, and Ray goes for the brass knuckles when, boom, he gets stomped by the mysterious masked man who, look at the height this man got.
Well.
Very high jump.
Yeah.
And this leads to the Superstar Splash, as it's been dubbed by Logan Paul.
Really the best name? Like, you know,
the Superstar Splash.
This marketing genius could have come up with, really?
Yeah, like the, I'm sure he could have gone for
Prime Time Splash. I don't know, like, you know, Japanese Forest Dive.
Oh, yikes.
I mean, you yes. know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure we could.
Crypto scam.
There's so many. Punk did call him a YouTube scammer in his promo as well. He did get a dig in on him there. So he wins in 15 minutes. Punk returns, and the masked man runs into the crowd. And as they're looking at him, he slowly takes. Now, this, we got a pretty good close up of him before he unmasked. It was very clear who this was. But just in case, he slowly removes it, and the reveal is there, the higher power. It's me, Austin. It was me all along. And this guy, he shaved his head. He looked very,
what?
I don't know.
What?
All I'm going to say is this is a very easy pop, like the reveal of a mystery. Did anyone react when this guy unmasked?
Well, again, this was maybe a tough crowd to please, but yeah, like, I mean, from the moment that like Austin Theory was one of the rumored leaked names attached to War Games, I think we were all met with the same reaction. Like, huh? You know, like, how are you going to take this guy who really, like, last we saw was attached to Grayson Waller and really like a bit of a lost cause, wasn't even the star of that team. Why would you put him in such a prominent role without any sort of like significant rehab in a role like this? Like, not to mention the fact that, I mean, this is now several weeks removed from War Games. We all kind of know who this is. I didn't think it was, I wasn't expecting it to be a big deal. I just,
you know what the problem is though? If they had let this go any longer, like into January, then you're naturally going to get all these fans expecting like a Jericho or something, that this will be a real letdown. So I feel they couldn't run with this too long. It's like, we have to get this guy as the before people start fantasy booking, like some big reveal that this was never going to be.
Yeah. Like, for me personally, I didn't think there was really any mystery to it, period. But I mean, for those that, you know, actually didn't know, like, was this a satisfying reveal, I wonder? I mean, even now.
Not to these 7,700 people.
You know, even now, if like, I wonder if their hopes were up. Maybe they were expecting Edge, you know, or something.
Where was this compared to DDP as the Stalker?
Oh,
I'm trying to think of unmaskings.
Nothing beats that. Nothing. That's among the worst. Yeah.
So that ends the show. That does not end the show, because Punk is staring down Theory. Hops off the turnbuckle and gets speared by Bron Breakker, who tells Punk, if you ever speak about my family like that again, you'll never stand on 2 feet again, and holds up the belt at the end of the show. So he's going to cripple him if he talks about Rick or Scott again. Yeah, I think we're probably going to get these guys showing up in Brooklyn in some form or fashion. They're like, they never bring up Rick and Scott, and they hit it so hard in this show in both cases.
Yeah, even if it was just like Punk maybe like deciding to put that into his promo, I feel like there's going to be like an expectation demand, and I feel like there's something you can do with Rick and Scott to, I don't know, have them involved somehow. Again, I don't know how much I would trust them to, like, you know, do something substantial, but I think you will see them at least.
Maybe they're in the front row. Punk makes his entrance at the Barclays Center. trans rights are human rights, and he takes his shirt off to put on top of Rick.
That would have been a promo that would have changed my opinion about CM Punk in 2025. If
that's what 2011 Punk would be. Yes. That's the level that he's loading up the shotgun with.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I've got to say the Raw to me was match-wise, I thought this was like a pretty ho-hum edition of the show. Crowd was really not that engaged, and I can't say like that really elevated my level, but I did enjoy the Gunther segment. I thought that was like a really good follow-up, and I think that crowds are going to mimic tonight's reaction to Gunther. I think this guy's going to get a lot of heat, and if AJ is where he's going next, like in like the next month or so, you know, that's a fine. Someone suggested to me about like Randy as somebody that could show up, and it's, you know, he is someone to defend John Cena. He was the old legend killer. Like, you're looking for programs to potentially keep Gunther busy until you get to that next big one. And AJ could be one. Randy could be one. Like,
Randy could be one. At the same time, I feel like Randy only comes in to lose now. And I feel like at some point you know, you're probably still looking for that, like, more, like, substantial Cody versus Randy program. And to have him come in and lose again, you know, do you continue risking?
And you've also been to the well with Randy and Gunther. I mean,
right,
you did do that last year, and
you know, like, this show certainly felt a little lacking without, I think, some of the like grandeur of a John Cena you know, being attached to it. I mean, they kind of played that card at the beginning of the show, and
it was a new era. Tonight was the new era, Paul Levesque promised.
It didn't look great, you know, like, it was fine, it was like overall okay, but it didn't feel like a big enough show to live up, I guess, to maybe, you know, like a John Cena retirement type of feel. But we are approaching the holidays, and I feel like you're feeling some of that, you know, like even the momentum towards Rumble isn't there. They're trying to make this Netflix show feel like a big deal. We'll see if they're able to do that. But these shows, especially the tape one coming up next week, is going to be a huge step down, I think.
All the focus is going to be January 5th. Like, that's when things will heat up, because these next shows, I'm not going to say they're throwaway, but they're, everything's focused towards the shows in the new year. That show at Barclays, and then the first 3 hours SmackDown that you would imagine is going to be a big built-up edition of SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it, everybody. Those were our thoughts on Raw. We're going to get yours in the forum in just a couple of minutes, but we are going to bid farewell to everyone here on the YouTube channel. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your way out, and we're going to be back later on this week. We've got the Wellness Policy Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Poison Rana will be up Tuesday night with a big review of NXT, and word is out that I will be stopping by the BDE for a viewing of Home Alone 3. Starring Alex Pruitt as the successor to Kevin McAllister.
Okay. You know, this one might be the one people are looking forward to the most. Okay. Is this, don't spoil it, but I mean.
No, they spoiled it in 1997 by making this film.
Gotcha. All right.
That's coming up I don't know when they're dropping this.
You've had quite the week of extracurricular viewing between the Bubba the Love Sponge documentary and now Home Alone 3. Poor you.
You know what? This is the punishment I put myself through. So that's coming up Tuesday. Wednesday, we've got Pollock and Thurston and a late night edition of Rewind to Dynamite. And then Wayne and I will review the 2002 WWF draft on Rewind Away this coming week, where we're traveling back 23 years.
Yeah.
And if you,
before
no,
Devon
no
Evans.
Dead time in any of these matches, folks, no matches going through commercial breaks. I mean, Jesus Christ, they fit in like 7 matches into this 2 hour Raw. Just breakneck speed. 20 picks.
A different time.
A very different time. All right. Time to go to forum.postwrestling.com.